This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 23. Everything looked different through the narrow and dim cone of the torch. Tom focused on finding the path and then on his feet as he climbed the hill. The still night air smelled of a childhood he couldn't quite recall. In the absence of light, the night was alive with an aromatic mix that somehow smelled of mountain and moon and stars. It smelled too of the earth under his feet, the water running underground. Tangible and intangible sensations invoking long-lost thoughts and memories that remained tantalizingly beyond his reach. But as he stepped over the juddering spotlit walls of the ruin and made his way up to the rocks, there were certain things he knew to be true. True and impossible. The rocks making up this pile of rubble he thought of as home were covered in moss. How long ago they'd fallen he had no idea. But the time was measured in decades, perhaps centuries. Once again, his thoughts and emotions struggled with common sense. Nevertheless, he recalled the first time he'd seen the woman he now felt was his mother. Then she had seemed to walk through a door that splintered and reconstructed between blinks. If Tom had been hallucinating then perhaps he'd done so again. The disfigured madman had dragged his mother and Tess through a solid pile of bricks. Well, that's what happened in hallucinations, a sensible him told his other self. But Tom did not break step. He reached the rocks, dropped his small tools and, still standing, prodded the ground with the thin and rusted end of the spade. The noise clanged through the night, and close by a ground-nesting bird shrieked and flapped inefficient wings into the air. He dropped to his knees, the torchbeam following his eyes to light a small patch of stone and moss in animal parts. He took his trowel and scraped away the moss, picked up a dismembered leg bone and cleared the bed in a succession of scratching, dog-like throws behind him. And then he found it. His hands, bleeding from the fingernails, black and patchwork-stained mossy green, flickered in and out of the bobbing, frantic light. So intent in the hellish gardening, so focused on the images that came and went in his head, that he almost missed it. All three had stood where he knelt now. His mother, Tess, him. Tom's heart spurred him on, a walloping sound driving his pace to the war beat of galley slaves. Tom replayed the scene. Tess had knocked a man off balance and soon she herself lay twitching on the ground, the woman jumping to her aid, lightning-bright cracks turning the black shreds of night to fire. And she too fell, the cruel rod in her grasp, ozone and burnt beef scenting the air. Gnarled, flaking fingers scrunched fabric in Tom's mind. The woman's head lolled back, her long blonde hair sweeping the ground, her pale neck stretched taut, throat exposed. And then the sound of tearing cloth, the pop of buttons, the guttural grunt and fury of mismanaged anger. And he saw it then. He saw it then and felt it in his hand now. The string around her neck, digging into her flesh, a line gashing her skin, deep, as though destined to break through as a thin noose tightened and tightened still. and snap. It whipped from her neck, elastic and ecstatic, free. The white line, now red, circling her neck, the string and pendant falling to earth. The woman somehow floating into the rock with Tess as the stone heart hit the ground with the force of a fallen tombstone. Tom brought his hand back from the verge of a backward throw. He slowed to a virtual stop, sensing the enormity of his find before he knew what it was, before he saw it. He recognized the feel of it and felt that recognition within himself. The light from his torch now steady, he opened his hand and gawked at it, the polish dulled by time, but the stone heart still beautiful, still smooth, and still capable of ripping him apart. He brought the object closer to the light and picked at a tiny thread jutting from a hole running from one side of the pendant to the other. A piece of string or wound cloth, all that remained of the disintegrated chain, slid easily from the cavity. He caressed its surface with one thumb and then another, wiping a thin film of greasy life from its surface. The movement, this intimate act, brought him ever closer to the skin the stone had last touched. And at once the heart became the key to a part of him that was always there, but buried in some safe place that was about to be opened.
Chapter 24. Clutching the stone, Tom's finger circled the white neck of its owner, his mind back in the place of dreams and nightmares. He felt the happy laughter of spinning joy, his head thrown back with the exuberance of childhood. Back in the dream house, he felt the warmth of the fire, the heat of his mother's body, the smell of wood smoke, heard the constant fiddle, the sing-song lullaby. Now, though, as he spun and laughed, another image pushed its way through the happy scene. He lay in bed, the hypnotic heart swinging before his eyes and then rising. A kiss left on his forehead, the light now dimming, and darkness. The calm suddenly replaced by raised voices beyond the closed door. The words, angry and ugly, pounded against the panels, muffled by them. Venomous sounds formed to wispy clouds that drifted to the floor, through the white line under the door and reconstructed themselves in the inside of Tom's black room. Ghost words that matched the furious sounds of adults not yet killing each other. Tom shook himself to rid the image from his mind, but really, this is what he'd hoped to find. The truth. Who he was. The stone heart in his hand plundered his memory with unrelenting efficiency, and lying in bed, the words drifted towards him, shimmering a terrifying ethereal power. The young Tom sat up, watched and listened.
"Don't interfere, woman!"
And the words circled the boy's head, closed on his neck as though a noose set to strangle the life from him.
"They're children!
They have to learn!"
And then the man's voice chilled and the words morphed and turned an icy blue, so cold that Tom's breath became a pale vapour that crusted on contact with the sentence.
"And you have to learn too."
And then a scream, the words closer now, circling ever faster, the ozone and the burning, the freezing noose in Tom's hands, tearing at it. His fingers burning on the ice, the warmth of his hands melting the letter so that their substance wetted his skin to a slick liquid that seemed to spread over his palm and around each hand. Tom shook himself free and once more he floated into the air. The words and the night time gone. The room replaced by unfocused walls and a dim light that surrounded them and came from nowhere and everywhere at the same time. Below, a younger Tom and a younger Tess sat bound by leather belts encircling their waists, their chests, their ankles, and their foreheads, all to strange high-backed chairs rising from ankle-deep pools of water. Barefooted, the pair waited their fates with grim determination not to cry. Tom drifted downwards, But instead of seeing from close by as he had intended, he seemed to merge with the boy in the seat and then saw, heard and felt everything as the youngster did. Sitting straight backed, Tom was angled towards Tess. She looked fearless, her long red hair braided to a tight rope, tiny freckles peppering her nose and bare arms. Tom instinctively tried to move, knew before he did that it was useless. Tess threw him a look and Micro shook her head. He wasn't to move, but of course, he did. It was then that the boy noticed the thing touching his head. A small, semicircular cradle supported the back of his skull and neck, pressed tight by the strap girdling his forehead. A tiny tingle tickled his skin where the cold metal touched him. He pulled away and the strap hauled him back. Close to and in front of the children, this shuffling and hunched figure of their tormentor took his place in his own chair, apparently unconcerned by the struggles of the pair in front of him. Tom raged, anger pouring through his veins as though replacing the blood that gave him life. He wrenched his head forward and pulled on his arms, kicked his feet. The boy's bonds tightened in a pain. Molten steel shot through the back of his neck as though the cradle had turned to fire. It raged through his body, in and up and down, through his head, his torso, flowing through his feet to the water at his toes.
"Stop fidgeting, boy,"
the man said.
"You've done this before. Don't be a baby."
But Tom continued to struggle, fire searing his neck and his toes. "Tom!" shouted Tess. Her words as painful to her as Tom's movement was to him.
"Sit still. It's not so hard if you just sit still."
Distracted by her voice, Tom stopped struggling and the pain ceased. Tess too seemed to slump without moving and her face softened to a statuesque plea for her brother to make it easy on himself. Her brother. Soon the man sat opposite them, hunched across the short gap and unbuckled Tess's left arm and Tom's right. Tess seemed to know what was expected of her. She entwined her fingers with Tom's, their hands fusing as one. The girl's strength suddenly evident to the boy, a strength far beyond that of her build, beyond the slip of a girl that sat beside him. The comfort of Tess's touch was shadowed by another. Stretching either side of them, the man grasped the children's tethered and outer hands. The contact shocked Tom more than the pain. Without thinking, he tried to turn his head to look at the corrupting link, but the strap tightened around his head and boiling oil flowed through his veins.
"Now, Tom,"
the man said with a benign smile,
"if you've finished fooling around, we can begin."
DreamWorks.com.